You're listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast with your hosts, Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan.
Welcome to this week's Soccer Report Extra podcast. I'm Bobby McMahon. Alongside me is Owen O'Callaghan. At the controls, we have producer Luke Crawford. This week, we go around the world. Well, around the world if you exclude Asia. World Cup qualifying in South America in CONCACAF, Euro 2012. A few more slots are decided there. Qualifying for 2012 African Cup of Nations concluded with shocks galore. And finally, we stop off in North America with a look at MLS. But we start off World Cup qualifying. Finally, got going in South America. Owen, four games on the weekend.
Yep.
On Friday, four more. Colombia make their debut on Tuesday. Argentina, Chile, probably the result that stands out.
Yeah. First competitive game for Alejandro Sabella as Argentina coach. And he changed things.
Apparently he played for Sheffield United and Leeds.
Sabella did?
Yes. Do you not know that? I thought, I see everybody making that reference now.
Oh God, I'm a bit behind the times.
Yeah, Sabella played Sheffield United. He came after the field to sign Maradona.
What year would this have been?
This would be 79. Yeah, he was an inside left for Sheffield United. I remember him well.
Was he any use?
He got a fair bit of publicity. It was the time when Ardiles and Ricky Villa the left back, Argentine left back that went to Birmingham. Tarantini, I think it was. Big hair. Had the big hair before. Big hair was fashionable.
Ah, big hair.
Yeah. Yeah. Sabella went there and went to Leeds after that. In the early 80s.
Then very
went
back to say,
oh, I thought you knew that.
I didn't.
No. Well, you're probably too young.
I am only
You're very
four.
Young at 79.
I was minus seven, so I was...
I thought you would have been a more intelligent fetus than that.
so would I, actually. That's pretty embarrassing.
Yeah. You know? Anyway, so that's probably the basis of the reason he got the Argentine job.
Well, thankfully, his side didn't play like Sheffield Wednesday against Chile, and they racked up four goals. Gonzalo Higuain with a hat-trick.
John Ashton's going to be after you.
Ooh,
he hears that.
Oh, dear.
He's a Sheffield United supporter, isn't he?
Well, I said Sheffield Wednesday, though.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
There you go.
Okay. So much for the fast-paced nature of this podcast.
he definitely put his own stamp on the team. Obviously, former Estudiantes coach. And in midfield, he selected Rodrigo Braña as a defensive midfielder.
Yes.
And in front of him, Ever Banega was there. Messi, Higuain up top, Angel Di Maria. There seemed to be a little bit more of a conventional setup to that side. And they opened the scoring after 8 minutes. Chile had a free kick. It was charged down. Di Maria raced up the left side, clipped a beautiful pass across to Higuain, took a first touch, bang, near post. And that was pretty much it.
Not a great result for Chile, though, was it?
No, they were without Sanchez, obviously. And they seemed to just lack that sort of cutting edge up top. You know, they found it difficult to make breakthroughs. Perhaps people might argue that four goals for Argentina is a little bit flattering. But the goal that Argentina conceded, you know, when you see it again, as much as there's changes further out the field, at the back, they still
stink.
They just seem to be just nervous. You know, you can't be sure that, they're not going to give a stupid mistake away. There was a cross came in, defender hoofs it up into the air, goalkeeper comes out, makes a hash of a punch, and then, you know, Chile just took it away for a consolation goal. But it's decent. Now, it does begin about 750 days of South American qualifying. So,
but
you know,
Tim Vickery many times, and it's a very valid point, has drawn the conclusion that the extended World Cup qualifying for South America has actually led to an increase in the standards. Because many years gone by, it used to be a couple of groups of three, group of four.
That's true.
And pretty much we knew who was going to come out. Yeah. Then they changed it to the group of 10, now group of 9 this time. And really, you look at the teams that can go through 4.5 places. So you're talking about half the teams, or more than half the teams could qualify here should they win the playoff. But that, with the fact that there is no qualifying tournament for Copa America, actually gives Venezuela and some of the other clubs, Ecuador, I've seen Ecuador emerge through this new format as well. So, yeah, we might criticise it, but it's certainly no more a marathon than we look to in Europe and CONCACAF, where you look at all the qualifying tournaments there. Mm-hmm. But all going back to the results on Friday, all them home wins.
Ah, Is there a pattern here?
There is a pattern here, but it's a pattern we've seen for some time. Just very quickly, we'll go over the games that are coming up on Tuesday. Bolivia at home to Colombia. So Colombia are going up the mountain. Paraguay at home to Uruguay. Uruguay won their opener 4-2 against Bolivia. Chile at home to Peru. Peru had 2-0 winners over Paraguay at home. And Venezuela at home to Argentina.
Oof.
But you go back over the years and you just pick one league table out, and it was the qualifiers for 2006. You just see in South America how important and how strong teams are at home.
It's like MLS.
It's very much, if you drop home points, you're going to be in trouble. You look at them. Brazil, unbeaten at home the last time. Chile lost a couple out of nine. Paraguay lost a couple. Argentina only lost one. Uruguay, who finished fifth the last time, lost two. But even you go down further than that, Ecuador, they've got the advantage of playing at altitude as well. They only lost two. Colombia lost three. Venezuela lost four. That was the most out of nine games. But they still won four at home. Bolivia lost three. Peru only lost two. And Peru finished bottom of the group. Only losing two home games and qualifying, they finished bottom of the group. They lost all nine away last time. So we got to, I think, as we go through South American qualifying, taking into consideration, great start for the home teams, but it's picking up away points that really make a difference.
And also, in many respects, going on your travels and picking up a point potentially is probably worth 2 points for you. I know that sounds pretty strange, but with so much emphasis placed on how successful teams are at home. I mean, if you pick up anything away from home, you're doing very, very well.
Well, you go back to the 2010 table. Brazil, 15 points on the road. Chile, 16. No team got more points than them on the road the last time. Paraguay, 12. And then you're into the single figures. Argentina only got 8 points in nine games away from home the last time. Only two wins. So if they can go to Venezuela and win,
sure,
Caracas and win, that would be a real boost for them. Uruguay, only 9. Ecuador, 8. Colombia 7, Venezuela 9, Bolivia 1.
And that away form, by the way, for Argentina, very nearly cost them a place at that World Cup.
It did, because remember that game against Uruguay, and the game against Peru, the nerves really started taking effect. But that's something we'll have to watch, and we'll look out for the games Tuesday and see how these teams, Colombia on their first, Colombia making their debut, because we've got 9 teams in this league, there's one sitting out all the time. Something to keep an eye on. CONCACAF qualifying kind of moseyed along a bit more.
It did.
Teams putting themselves in a position to get through the qualifying stage and move on. Very quickly, we can look at some of the more important or some of the more critical.
You've got a lot of notes.
There is a lot of notes,
podcast.
But when you go around the world, you have to have a lot.
You need to be well informed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Guatemala making a mockery. A mockery they're making of the seeding.
What do they make?
A mockery.
Okay.
9 points for 3 games. Grenada, who were the seeded team in Group E, only 3, along with Belize and St. Vincent, the Grenadines. So it looks like Guatemala are on the cusp. Not only they make a mockery, but they are on the cusp of moving into the next round. Canada could very much wrap it up this Tuesday as well. If they get a couple of results going their way, they'll have to play Puerto Rico.
7-0 against St. Lucia.
7-0. It should have beaten St. Lucia by about the same score.
Simeon
Toronto
Jackson
well.
With a hat trick.
Yes. Ian Hume with a couple. Yeah. And making his mark again after that bad injury courtesy of Chris Morgan a few years ago. Olivier Osien with a couple as well. But if they can beat Puerto Rico, with no doubt, no reason they cannot do that at BMO Field on Tuesday. And Puerto Rico, St. Kitts and Nevis would then play St. Lucia. If St. Lucia could take someone off St. Kitts and Nevis, then essentially Canada would be through and nullify, or I don't know if nullify is the right word, but the two remaining games against St. Kitts and Nevis would mean absolutely nothing. Panama, who is likely to join Canada in the next round, they're sitting there with 6 points. Nicaragua with 3. Dominica. I never really rated Dominica.
As thoroughbreds go, Dominica wouldn't be a thoroughbred.
Do you think we're going to get an email from somebody in Dominica?
Going by where people download our podcast from.
I know, you can never. I apologise now if I've
also,
defamed
I would,
Dominica.
Yes, I would like to apologise to our fans in Dominica if you did take offence to that comment.
Yeah. Guyana, sitting pretty good. That Trinidad and Tobago result made it very interesting, didn't it? Losing 2-1 at home, or 2-1 away to Bermuda. Mm-hmm. Barbados are sitting there with no points from 3 games, but Bermuda are now sitting with 3 points. That was their first win. Trinidad and Tobago, 6 points for 3 games. Guyana, 100% record so far. That is...
a firm handshake to them.
It's Pfister that that is the... No, I'm not being rude. Pfister is the the man in charge of Trinidad and Tobago, I believe.
Otto Pfister,
yes. Remember Togo manager in 2006, I think it was. So he is trying to gear up Trinidad and Tobago a little bit based on that result, saying it was just one game. But
he's refusing to panic, apparently.
Well, it makes a better headline than, sorry, I've looked at the result and I'm going to panic. Have you ever seen a manager who's admitted he's panicking? panic.
Also, I'd like to point out that we were talking about this in the office about Bermuda. They don't sell triangles when you arrive in Bermuda.
They should, shouldn't they?
Shouldn't somebody get on that?
That was Michelle that was there, wasn't it?
Michelle was on holiday there.
Yes.
And bring us back a Bermuda triangle. And, you know, they don't have it.
You know what it could be? You know, like in Hawaii, they give you the lei, the flower lei.
Yeah.
It's just a pool table triangle that they throw over your neck. Just a billiard ball wrap.
So anyway, Trinidad and Tobago on Tuesday are at home to Barbados, which shouldn't be too difficult for them. Guess where Guyana are?
Oh, please.
They're in Bermuda. Didn't see that one coming, did you?
We didn't.
So it looks like it very much is going to come down to, because I'm just trying to catch the results so far. Guyana beat Barbados 2-0. And Guyana, what was the other result they had? I'm guessing here, I haven't got the full table in front of me, but I think what we're facing here is a situation where Guyana and Trinidad and Tobago are going to go head to head. Is that the case?
It looks that way. I'm just sorry. I was reading some comments from Otto Pfister after that 2-1 defeat to Bermuda last Friday, and this is actually what he says after the game. In football, you have three possibilities: win, lose, or draw. He actually says that.
He could be a pundit on the BBC.
I'm like, that is, as management goes, is inspiring.
It's insightful as
well. You know, before a big game, listen, boys, when we get out there, there's three possibilities. We can win it, we can lose it, or we can draw it. So get out there, have a good time, enjoy yourself. What a maniac.
He just knows no limits, does he? But the last group, El Salvador leading Suriname, 9 points, Suriname coming up with 7. Big game on, that's not till November, Suriname playing El Salvador.
They've gone till November.
We've got to wait to that one. El Salvador playing the Cayman Islands on Tuesday, and Suriname playing the Dominican Republic. Now, just make it clear, we diminished Dominica, but not the Dominican Republic.
The Dominican Republic. And also apologised for our comments about Dominica.
Yes.
Just to reiterate.
Yeah. So, Canada should be through, right?
Ah.
Panama should be through as well. The big guys, it looks
the
like...
The big guns.
The ones, if anybody's going to... It's in trouble. Sorry to Pfister here, Otto. But maybe you should be panicking a little bit.
Maybe you should be panicking about how obscene and disgusting his surname is. I'd change that if I was him.
Probably doesn't mean the same in German, though.
Do you think
I'm just suggesting. I think not. Let us move on. Let us move to Europe. Euro 2012. Wasn't that an exciting weekend?
Wasn't it just?
Oh, God.
Oh, you were sarcastic.
I was sarcasm alert.
I wasn't.
Yeah.
I actually
So where's the surprises? There is no surprises.
There's a few.
What's the surprises? That Scotland are still in the contention?
That Estonia currently sit in a playoff place?
Yes, but...
That Armenia...
But they do not
have
control...
Have to go to Dublin? They could finish in a playoff spot if they beat Ireland on home soil?
I'm talking about somewhere like Germany getting knocked out, or Spain getting knocked out, or Italy not making it, or England not making it. Oh, that... Well, that
almost happened.
Yeah, 2008. But really, you look through it. Germany are through, right?
Yeah, but outside of the thoroughbreds, though, there's still plenty of permutations going into the last day.
There are, but they're pretty unexciting, aren't they?
Nah.
You think so?
Maybe I'm too naive and romantic for my own good.
I guess we go Group A. Germany are through. Belgium and Turkey going into the last game. Belgium have got to go to Germany and get a result.
Which looks
unlikely. Or hope that Turkey don't get a result against Azerbaijan.
And Gus Hiddink saying that he's going to resign if Turkey don't qualify.
I think he'll be linked to a job very quickly. What do you think the chances of that are?
Highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. What, we're thinking that there's hyperbole involved in managerial decisions?
Did you see the one this weekend? Marquisio, three goals, one for Italy, two for Juventus, linked with Manchester United.
Of course he is. Did you read that on goal.com?
No, I think it was one of the Italian sites.
As was brought up in our office this week, goal.com, right? I'm sorry for anyone who goes on there and reads it. Actually, I'm not. Sorry for you for going online and reading that dirge. But also, we were talking about in the office about how goal.com is the football journalistic equivalent to TMZ. That there's all these guys who sit around the table
making it up
in the office going, oh, I've got a great one. Ronaldo to Angie McCatchkala. How about that? Oh, let's get on that. Let's write that story up.
We have pictures.
We've got pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah, he's wearing nothing except an Angie McCatchkala jersey. How about that? Shame on you.
How did that start? That's Marquisio, Azerbaijan,
rumors.
Turkey, rumors. Yeah.
Not Fleetwood Mac rumors.
Can you go? Classic album.
Oh, brilliant.
Can you see Belgium getting a result in Germany?
I can't.
I can't either. I think Turkey are going to. Oh, that was Hiddink. That's where we went.
Hiddink,
from.
Yes. Which is a shame because this Belgian team, this current makeup, is just.
You know what's going to happen, don't you? They're going to blossom during World Cup qualifying. And you can easily do the link between Belgium and the other team in the group.
Yes.
Or one of the other countries in the group.
But yeah, Turkey, Gus Hiddink, getting to a playoff. You'd have to fancy your chances.
Mm. Russia. Here's one you should know something about. Russia, Republic of Ireland, Armenia.
Don't do this to me.
Surely Armenia's not going to get a result.
Three straight wins.
Yeah, scored some goals.
11 goals in their last three
games. They have scored
games.
21 goals now. What's happened to them?
You know what?
What?
They've had nothing to lose.
That's true.
And they haven't. Also, I'd like to point out that in Ireland's first game in that group,
that was Macedonia they thrashed on Friday, wasn't it?
They knocked 4-1. Four past Macedonia the game before that. They went to Slovakia and knocked 4 past them.
Yep.
Slovakia, who've completely gone the other way.
Slovakia have gone completely the way that we've seen many teams go after having good, getting to the big tournament, getting a decent result.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go in reverse gear.
Yeah.
Just can't keep it going.
Ireland went to Armenia in their first game in that group and they got a 1-0 win. And a lot of people on their backs.
I remember we talked about that down the road at some point and said that was a good result.
Yeah.
I think we did that on the show.
Because I remember watching that game myself and a buddy just conversing afterwards how Armenia were genuinely impressive and that they would cause teams problems, particularly playing at home. As it's turned out, even on their travels, they've just pulled together some terrific results. Now going to Dublin, they need to go and win, and it's simple shootout, and it's whoever wants it most. And Ireland at home have been thoroughly unimpressive.
But a draw gets Republic through.
Draw gets them through, and with Trapattoni being such a kind of a pragmatic manager, people are saying, "Oh, he's going to play for the draw." They can't afford to do that because mathematically, however unlikely it is, with a win, Ireland can still top the group.
Ah, come on, Russia aren't going to lose to Andorra.
They're not. But what I will say is,
because the head-to-head, Russia have the better head-to-head.
So
well,
yeah, even if Russia draw, they'll still go through. But knowing Ireland's luck, they'll go and fucking draw at home to Armenia, pick up a point, and it's the one time when Andorra create European football history.
Well, was it a couple of major tournaments ago? It was Euro. It was last Euro, 2008. Russia went to Andorra, had to get a result. Arshavin chinned one of the Andorran defenders, got sent off, and that's why he missed the opening part of the
first two games of Euro 2008.
Did Russia go into playoff that time?
They
was
did
that the
go
Republic
through
as well?
No, it wasn't.
Wales, or was that years ago?
It was another Eastern European team, wasn't it? Russia for the 2008 Euros.
No, 2010 it was.
Oh, sorry,
I'm
thinking of 2010.
Yeah, that was Slovenia.
I'm not sure who they played in 2008.
Was there not a playoff against Ireland that time?
We didn't play them in the playoff, no.
You sure?
Yeah.
You didn't sleep through that?
I didn't. I guarantee that was one of the ones I didn't sleep through.
But you know what's shocking is when you look at some of the statistics from Group B, Russia, 9 games, right? And we're talking about playing. You know, you got Andorra in there. They've got to play Andorra again. So they've got a chance to maybe pad their stats a little bit. But the first 9 games, they've only scored 11 goals.
Oh, it's been. The quality in Group B has been poor.
It's pretty, yeah.
I mean, the games have been. And it comes back to. It comes back to a wider debate I was having with a mate of mine actually quite recently. You know, because a lot of people get on the back of Giovanni Trapattoni for the style of play that they would love.
He's not going to change at his age, is he?
And also, the thing is that that's, you know, outside of the teams that, that we talked about at the start of this chat about the thoroughbreds in European qualifying, there seems to be a real change in international football through qualification where the onus is on getting a result. Yeah. You look at other teams like your Portugals and your, you know, the French side. It's, you know, they're, you know, standing on going into the last day of qualifying still with a little bit of doubt whether or not they'll go through as first place. So it seems to be a more pragmatic approach for managers in international football level. It's not free flowing. It's not very entertaining. And, you know, when you look at results like that and, you know, a lack of teams scoring lots of goals, and it's like, well, okay.
I think to some extent the bigger teams are willing to take that gamble. They look at the schedule. They look at what they've got, like France and Bosnia Herzegovina in the final game. Portugal now, you know, it doesn't work out for Portugal. They've got to go to Denmark.
Yeah.
But I think they look at it and say, you know, we think we're probably the best team in this group. You know, when it comes down to a one game that we need to get a result. In Portugal's case, it just needs a draw, I believe, because of the head to head. And they should go through. France, same thing, just need a draw to go through. Really, if you can't get draws in these situations, you're maybe not as good as you think you are.
Let's go through the rest of the
group. So Group C, Italy through a couple of rounds ago. Estonia, we talked about before. Serbia still called the hammer on this one.
Because Estonia are finished now.
Estonia are finished. Serbia have to go to Slovenia.
Yes.
Now, could be kind of tricky because you've got geopolitical kind of connotations in that as well.
But Slovenia on home soil, they've lost three of four games.
Another Slovakia, Slovenia, the one that became interchangeable at the World Cup for most for a lot of people. Another perhaps gone a little bit regressed a little bit rather than progressed. And you've got, of course, you've got Ireland, who went through a change of manager this morning.
Yeah, Nigel Worthington stepping down.
So, Jim Magilton, I think, has been installed as the bookies' favourite to take over.
Yeah.
You just line them up, actually, don't you?
Former international teammate of Nigel Worthington.
Yeah. But you just, it's typical kind of
interchangeable.
You know, who's Irish? Who's out there?
Yeah.
Let's go get them.
Is Laurie Sanchez available? Well, interestingly, enough, a couple of months ago, Laurie Sanchez saying, hey, listen, I've got a bit of unfinished business with the North. I'm the best man for the job. And no pressure on Nigel whatsoever. But if he is sacked, I'm willing to step in there.
Yeah. Northern Ireland, unfortunately, have to finish off the series with a game against Italy. Otherwise, they'd be in a pretty good position to finish in kind of mid-table.
And early doors, the North looked as if, my God, if they get a decent couple of results on them, they could potentially feature here. And then
use three straight defeats. Use the home form as a launching pad, and it never quite worked out.
No.
Group D, France, Bosnia Herzegovina, very straightforward. France lead by a point. They play Bosnia at home. A draw puts them through as automatic. Bosnia are guaranteed the very worst they can get. Is a runners-up spot, they go into the playoffs. I don't think they're going to do well enough, from what I can see, to figure as the best second-place finisher.
Nope.
Group E, Netherlands playing Sweden. Netherlands played 9-1-9, scored 35 against 5, goal difference of 30, points 27, thanks very much. Sweden, 6 points behind. If they beat Netherlands, I believe they go through as the best second-place finisher. Now, easier said than done, of course.
Yes.
But Sweden, they'll probably get through. They'll probably come through the playoffs and they'll get to the tournament and they'll be boring. They're boring. Sweden are boring. Getting to Group F, big result was Greece over Croatia in that one.
Massive. Even with crowd trouble.
Yeah, I kind of thought Croatia were good enough to go and get a result there.
Speaking of crowd trouble in that game, Jonathan Wilson, he was at the game, was tweeting. Just such a hilarious tweet. He put up, so a lot of people were wondering how the trouble actually began. There was a missile thrown from the Greek fans into the... from the Greek fans into the Croatian fans. So one guy picks up something, decides, okay, I'm going to throw this at the Croatian fans to get a bit of a reaction. He threw whatever it was, and then it was just plucked straight like that. My Croatian fan is like, what do you think of that? You're feeling a bit scared now. And Wilson was just like, I can't remember exactly what he's like, but, you know, is it wrong to be impressed by what I've just seen?
By the level of...
By the level of hooliganism.
Or something.
Deplorable brilliance.
So going into the last round of matches, Greece, 2-point lead on Croatia. They have to go to Georgia.
Georgia on their minds.
Very good. And hope the lights
come
don't,
on.
Hope the lights come don't. On. Hope the lights don't go out. And are they taking the midnight train?
Okay,
there's three. One after another.
Also, keeping the musical theme, we mentioned Robbie Keane was missing for Ireland against Armenia on Tuesday.
Is that a George Best kind of missing?
Well, his wife is a former Miss Ireland.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. But Robbie Keane, on Sunday night, spent it in Gibney's in Malahide in Dublin, singing Garth Brooks songs. So we don't know for definite what Garth Brooks songs he was singing. There's a couple of Garth Brooks songs that are passable, and then there are others that are just dirge and should just be kind of set fire to.
I still think that Young Frankenstein was his best stuff he's done.
Really,
Garth Brooks.
It's not that Brooks. It's the...
Oh, sorry, another Brooks.
Yeah. Oh. I think you've mixed up your Brookses there.
Oh, I forgot about him.
What, Garth Crooks?
Let's
was
move
he,
on.
Is he a young Frankenstein?
Who did Croatia play? Croatia played Latvia. Latvia were in with a shot for a while in this group, and they faded away.
They did. I remember when Latvia were minnows. And now we can't.
And,
we can't
and, now,
really
and now what are they now? Tadpoles?
They're doing slightly better than their minnow status.
I remember when, it, what was it, 2004 they got to Portugal, wasn't it? They played in that group with, am I making this up? No, they did qualify. They got stuck in the group of death. Was it 2004 with Germany and Netherlands and somebody else?
Good grief. Your memory's better than mine.
They did. They had the wee guy that played for Southampton.
Marion Pahars.
Pahars, yeah.
I was just about to talk about Marion Pahars.
What was the centre half? Stepanic? The one that Arsene Wenger signed.
Igor Stefanovs.
Yes. He was awful.
The worst central defender in his
no, no,
history
he wasn't.
Of defending.
No, no. Pascal Sagan was much worse.
Oh, God.
Oh, this is a trip down memory lane.
Isn't it? Pascal Sagan.
Yeah. Dear and there was man. The other guy that was the... God, I can never pronounce his name. The midfielder was like 39, like 275 caps or something. He'd been round... He was a pretty decent player.
That's interesting.
Anyway, that's
anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the groups at hand. Group G, England, Montenegro, Switzerland. Do you want to talk about Gary Neville?
Yes, I do. Gary Neville writing in the Mail on Sunday, in his column on Sunday, funnily enough.
I'm writing in my column.
His column on Sunday. yeah, he just went on the rampage. Listen.
Like he used to do down the right side?
Oh, hey, that was a good one. Yeah, fair play to that. He was making these kind of hysterical points. Oh, the focus after England's 2-2 draw away in Montenegro that actually got them qualified for the European Championships. Yeah, the focus was on Wayne Rooney sending off. The focus should have been on how crap England were. And then he was talking about how the spine of the team pales in comparison to that of Spain. You're like, well, in fairness, I think a lot of teams' spine, you know, pales in comparison to the Spanish. He was talking about any team that contains names like Barry, Terry, Cahill, Bent in it have no chance against the better nations. As if this was England's kind of first choice team, which it's unfair because
well,
it
John
wasn't.
Terry is, isn't it?
John Terry is, yeah. Certainly. But, you know, you'd have to look
but
at...
But we're going through... Capello seems to be putting himself in a bit of position here. Is he trying to evolve this England team in time for Euro Championships next year, or is he going to go back to tried, true, and failed?
Well,
I was going to say tested, but they were tested and failed.
Yeah, book your return trip after the quarterfinals.
Yes, back before the postcards.
Yeah, and a late flight because you obviously have the penalty shootout to knock you out. So, but yeah, what Neville did say was the importance needs to be on getting through the younger players in that side, so that when
but
it Capello
does come has to no interest in that. There's no real payoff for Capello, given that he's going to be out after the European Championships.
And also,
Ari's going to take over.
And once Ari takes over, everything will just fall perfectly into place.
What do you mean I can't go and sign Xavi?
So listen, boys, I know
PK not English.
I've just been unveiled. How much do we have to spend? Right, let's go to the chase. Because I've got a few phone calls to make. Hey, you're a wheeler dealer.
No.
I'm not a wheeler dealer.
I'm a manager.
A wheeler dealer. But yes, and also what Neville was saying in this piece, which is why I just thought it was hysterical. He's talking about, guys like Tom Cleverley, guys like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. These are the... Are you seriously thinking that these guys are going to be first choice next summer in an international tournament?
Too early, isn't
it? I mean, just kind of mindless stuff. Yeah. There was,
but he's trying to position himself as a different voice. Trying to position himself in England as somebody that not shoots from the hip, but tells it like it is. England have produced, apart from a couple, pretty mundane pundits over the years.
Yes.
They're all kind of beige, aren't they?
Oh, very, very vanilla.
Is that the same as beige?
No, what? Beige, what, as flavours?
Yeah.
Can I get a beige ice cream cone? Doesn't really work,
no,
does it?
That's true.
Yeah.
But, well, you can get vanilla envelopes.
Manila envelopes. And Manila vanilla. We're getting off topic here.
We're getting into the history of the envelope. I thought I caught you lip syncing there.
Whatever happened to Milli Vanilli?
Whatever it was, we should all be thankful.
Well, because what was the story that they released a single and it wasn't actually them singing?
Which is embarrassing in itself. Anyway, so England go through, Montenegro go into the playoffs, that one's signed, sealed and delivered. Wales, as you pointed out, could finish third, but could also finish bottom still.
Yeah, as you tweeted me.
That was retaliation.
Back off,
get your own stat.
Somebody retweeted it though, obviously a Wales fan. Yeah.
But it's true, a couple of wins. Suddenly things are looking pretty good for them.
Well, 2-0 at home to Switzerland.
It was a good result.
Yeah, I mean, Switzerland.
Bad result for Switzerland.
Yeah, and I mean, we were talking when that World Cup draw.
Yeah, avoid Switzerland.
Maybe. Yeah. You said avoid Switzerland. Yeah. I was a little bit more sceptical.
Avoid Wales.
I'll be singing in the valleys tonight. If I hear that phrase once more. Is there any singing that goes on in the valleys? I mean,
all goes on in the stadium.
And is it always done by sopranos? You know, because there just seems to be, not the TV show, but, you know, classically trained female singers.
Group H. Actually, one that's kind of interesting. Portugal, Denmark. Game in Copenhagen, or Copenhagen, depending on whether you watch the Danny Kaye movie or not. Tied on 16 points. Portugal have a little bit of edge on the head-to-head, so if they get a draw, they go through.
Yeah, Norway are out. Head-to-head record.
Unless
they score 15 goals.
Something like that, yeah. It's ridiculous. And let's face it, if they score 15, they'll all be long balls. So that's that one. That could be interesting. That was probably is the most interesting game of
and
all.
And also, whoever loses that game between Portugal and Denmark, the chances are, now they'll obviously have to keep an eye on all the results, but chances are they could go through as best run result.
It could be.
A lot depends on Sweden against Holland.
Yeah, that is not an easy one. And then we get to Group I. I'll let you talk about Group I, because I'm not getting my hopes up. My hopes have been pretty down for a long time.
Well,
it's down to Lithuania, isn't it?
What I have said
in it
is what I'd say. What he did say was, at Hampden Park, when Spain were 2-0 up and Scotland had nothing to lose,
yes,
Scotland went for it.
They did have something to lose. Because they lost.
They ended up losing, but they got it back to 2-2.
Yeah.
To the reigning European and world champions, suddenly the whole of Hampden Park, my good God, what is going on here? And then Fernando Llorente scored and they were like, oh, that's more like it.
Yes, thank you. Normal services have been resumed.
Now to go to Alicante. Yes. Which is where Spain are playing this game on Tuesday.
It's going to be a hot atmosphere.
The last time Scotland players were in Alicante was on their summer holidays.
bright red.
Yeah. It looks totally unlikely that they're going to get anything from that game. So yes, they'll need to pick up a phone. Craig Levein needs to pick up the blower, get onto his Lithuanian counterpart and say, hey, listen, do us a favour against the Czech Republic, won't you?
Maybe Romanov could be a go-between there.
Interestingly. Yes. Romanov is crazy enough.
The first useful thing he's ever done.
Hey!
But Lithuania, you've got to. They beat Czech Republic in Prague.
Yeah.
But then they dropped 4 points out of six to Liechtenstein, who looked dreadful against Scotland. Although Scotland did make it very nervy in the last few minutes.
That's unlike them.
But you just. Czechs get a point, they go through.
And also, good grief, Czech Republic going through. They've just been horrible to watch in this qualification campaign.
They have dropped significantly.
They've just got nothing in the tank.
Yeah, you know?
And I like what you were saying about Sweden. You know, if Czech Republic somehow make it through to Europe, it's just going to be like watching paint on the walls, you know? Which, so, I've done it. It's not interesting. It's
you studied that at school, didn't you?
I've just done it just as a hobby, really.
Oh, was it? Wasn't something seriously you looked into?
Certain phrases, I've always, let's do it and see literally how boring it is. And answer is, it's quite boring.
What about watching grass grow?
Watching grass grow, again, tried it, but it's difficult, at least with paint.
Should be easier in Ireland.
Yeah, well, at least with paint.
It's certainly greener.
Paint drawing on what, you can go over and touch it to make sure if it's still wet. Grass growing, you don't, unless you've got a ruler or something. You need to tap into accessories.
So you really don't get that feedback you need to make it interesting.
Exactly. And it's difficult to gauge just how successful or unsuccessful you've been. So yeah. Paint drying on walls, much easier thing to do.
So anyway.
It's interesting how we haven't got a sponsor for this podcast yet. I wonder why. This show is going to be the highlight reel. This is one of the better ones.
Yeah, it is. Next off, we're going to take a trip to Africa. Okay, so now, African Cup of Nations, we did get surprises.
Isn't this interesting?
We knew going into this weekend there was this definite chance that there was some shocks going to come out of Africa, and they certainly did. We now have the qualified teams for the 2012 African Cup of Nations, and I guess there's a sidebar to this as well, which is a number of countries did not qualify, and these players have significant number of players who play in the big leagues in Europe, and these players will no longer be taken away from the clubs come the African Cup of Nations early next year in 2012. But the teams we have going through, Equatorial Guinea and Gabon as co-hosts, Angola, Botswana, Ghana, Guinea, Ivory Coast, Libya, there's a surprise.
Really, really incredible story.
Incredible story. Mali, Morocco, Niger, Senegal, Sudan, Tunisia, Zambia, and Burkina Faso. But that is still dependent on a protest, apparently. There's an eligibility issue with a player. So it's. But perhaps we can start with one of the teams that didn't qualify, South Africa. South Africa found themselves in a bit of a predicament, in as much as they were playing away and they thought they got the result they needed. They finished up with a draw. They were celebrating. Everybody was happy, and suddenly they realised they were kind of screwed. They hadn't qualified at all.
It was like, because it's weird, we were talking about this, that surely teams have logistics managers.
Yeah, but they help them get from A to B.
Technical staff, yeah. You know, that's...
Interested fans, even. Somebody shouting from behind the bench, you idiot!
Relatives of players.
Yeah.
Who go, you do realise a draw won't be enough.
Yeah. So let's go back again, Group G. How it finished up. Niger finished up 9 points, South Africa 9 points, and Sierra Leone 9 points as well. Egypt, big shock here, perennial African Cup of Nations winners over the last few tournaments, finished up bottom, only one win, 5 points. But we get to the last round of games. Egypt beat Niger 3-0, and South Africa drew with Sierra Leone 0-0. So you had the three teams tied on 9. Goal difference, South Africa had a goal difference of +2, Niger had a goal difference of -2, and Sierra Leone a +1. But the deciding factor was not goal difference.
No, even though Mosamani, the South African coach, afterwards, obviously the kind of South African football authorities as well, are appealing this decision based on the fact that, well, universally, goal difference is always used to decide tiebreakers. Yeah, but in the rules in your competition, that wasn't the case. So that's why you've been eliminated. This was just diabolical. I mean, to be in a situation where you're,
it's, you know, it's inexcusable.
Your team selection, the way you set up your side, your instructions to the players.
Scenario planning. Yeah. Knowing that the game's going at the same time.
So literally for, what, 4 or 5 days in advance of this,
nobody twigged.
No.
Now, was it possible that nobody, they didn't expect Niger to go to Egypt and lose 3-0?
Well,
you should have taken that into consideration.
Yeah, what...
even if they lose 1-0, it's still a factor.
What the South African coach said after the game was, Of course I bloody well thought that a scoreless draw was going to do me better. I had a striker on the bench. Wouldn't you think if I wanted a goal, I'd bring him on? At full time, all the players, all the staff, jubilant, joyful scenes. And then, because I was following the game on BBC Match Tracker.
Yeah.
And even BBC, a couple of minutes to go in the game, were saying, South Africa need to be careful here because a draw is not good for them. They'll be eliminated. And then, obviously, they are, minute by minute, updating on the fact that really strange scenes here in South Africa. They think they've qualified, but that's not
the
case.
They think it's all over.
It is now. And then BBC were getting texts and emails from South Africa supporters saying, what are you talking about? They are through. And BBC are saying, listen, we've just talked to the CAF. The rules are that it's not about goal difference. It's a mini group involving three teams. South Africa are out and Niger will be going through.
Yeah.
So there was just a mass of confusion. But the CAF, you know, just a simple phone call. Hey, listen, guys, what's the situation going into this game? But no one thought about it. They obviously just presumed it was goal differential. Was the case once again. South Africa.
But they look at it as well. They're making a case, but the rules are the rules are the rules. I guess they're looking at it saying, well, it's unfair. It's the one I remember on change of rules was Hearts way back in the 60s, going into the final game against Kilmarnock. Scottish League title on the line. Kilmarnock, because it was goal average in these days, had to win 2-0 at Tynecastle to win the league. To beat Hearts out. Hearts earlier that season had lost 7-1 to Dundee. But I throw that in as a... because that shows... because Dundee will come back into this story later on. Kilmarnock went there and won 2-0. And Hearts lost the Scottish League on the final day of the season on goal average to Kilmarnock. Because of that 2-0 result. Fast forward something like 20 years. Hearts are leading the table, going to the final game of the season, playing Dundee at Dens. Celtic are second. They're playing at St Mirren. Celtic beat St Mirren 5-1. Hearts lose 2-0 to Dundee. And guess what? It's goal difference now, and Celtic win the league. If the rules had been changed and in the 60s it had been goal difference, Hearts would have won the league. And if it had been goal average in the 80s, Hearts would have won the league as well. So there's a lot of Hearts fans sympathising with South Africa at the moment.
I don't know how anyone can sympathise with South Africa at the moment.
Yeah. Hearts fans probably could.
It's just
mind
stupid.
You, they did know the rules. But the other thing you look at, South Africa only lost one game.
They did, but they, you know...
They drew three, and that's what killed them.
Exactly.
They lost the one game to Niger.
And how many of those draws were at home for South Africa?
They drew a serial on away.
Just that one home draw.
Yeah, in the final game. We're talking about getting the result you need.
Yeah.
But Egypt, sitting at the bottom, only one win. That's probably as big a surprise as anything.
Yeah, I mean, Egypt eliminated before the final round of games.
Now, am I right in thinking that South Africa have actually qualified for 2013, though? I think they're hosting.
Are they sure they're hosting?
They better check out, because I think there was supposed to be Libya, if I'm not mistaken, in 2013.
And because of the situation
in Libya, I think South Africa have got
just
the competition.
Makes that Libya story just all the more incredible. Yes. And also, an amazing stat. We talked about this on Fox Soccer Report when Egypt were eliminated. And you talked about the changing of the guard in kind of African football in general. From the 9 winners of African Cup of Nations, Tunisia, the only one qualifying for next year's tournament.
You look at Group A now, you know, we're not great followers of African football, but Mali, Cape Verde, Zimbabwe, Liberia, Cape Verde and Mali finished tied on 10, but Mali go through again. I would assume was it on better goal difference? No, it was a head-to-head. Because actually, in that case, Cape Verde have got exactly the same. They actually would have gone out in goal difference as well in that situation. But Mali go through there. Group B, Guinea.
Yeah.
Knocked Nigeria out, and it really came down to Nigeria in a sensational finish, because Guinea were down 2-1 going into added time, finish up getting a tie, and that made all the difference in the world, because Guinea had gone into this tied with Nigeria, I guess, on 11 points each, and Guinea got the result. Sorry, no, they would have gone in with 13 points. So Nigeria needed to win it to overtake Guinea, and that equaliser did it. So Nigeria go out. I don't think Ethiopia, Madagascar is not going to claim that's a surprise, but Nigeria, another one of these countries that we pretty much expect to be at the World Cup
and Nigeria
and do
for,
well African Cup of
yeah,
Nations.
Nigeria for long periods. I mean, I suppose Nigeria were the Ghana of old or the Ivory Coast of old, where, you know, in the mid-90s and late 90s, they were pinpointed as if there's an African side to make
it was
a going difference,
to be them.
It was going to be Nigeria.
They were going to be the first ones to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we're getting Group C, Zambia and Libya both going through. Zambia with 13 points, Libya with 12 points, and I just don't think you can... there was an incredible article in the New York Times. I'll try and post it.
Oh, was it
sometime
Wall Street Journal?
New York Times. I think it was New York Times blog, the one I read.
Okay.
James Montague that wrote it. Maybe it was the Wall Street Journal.
Maybe I was looking at a different one again.
James Montague, an article on Libya and the strife the team went through as well. The fact the team split in terms of taking different sides in the civil war or the revolution.
Montague's a terrific football writer on Africa.
Very good on top of stuff. So Libya actually go through and Zambia go through. Zambia, one of these great and unfulfilled teams, a terrible disaster that they had some years ago when they lost the team in the plane crash. Morocco bouncing back, 11 points. They went through.
Morocco kind of had that golden generation at the start of the millennium. You know, with Nebets and Mustafa Hadji was part of that Moroccan team as well.
Yeah, Algeria go out, World Cup qualifier the last time, and Central African Republic, but Morocco go through, and that was from Group D. Group E, Senegal back into it. Is it, and quite handily too, finished 5 points ahead of Cameroon.
And again, like...
Very strong.
Not to be repeating ourselves, but, you know, I mean, the heavyweights are struggling to stay relevant, aren't they?
Well, with a couple of exceptions we're going to get to shortly, but Senegal,
exactly.
Very, very impressive. 5 wins, only 1 draw, and Cameroon 5 points behind. Then we get to Group F, Burkina Faso, I guess it's dependent on that.
Sure.
They claim whether they're playing an ineligible player. And Gambia, I would only assume, would be the player that would be the country that would take advantage of that situation.
And again, if that is the case, a substantial points difference between the side who finishes top and the side who finishes as
well. Depends on punishment and interpretation. Group G, we talked about already, with Niger going through at the expense of South Africa and Sierra Leone. Then we get into Group H, which is one of the powerhouses that did actually come through, Ivory Coast, doing it in quite spectacular fashion. Six, played six, won six, scored 19, conceded only 4. Did it at an absolute breeze.
I think as well, you would look at the relative ease of the group. You know, I think you're maybe not coming up against...
Yeah, Rwanda sniffed around
a little bit
in the past, but ultimately we will see whether Ivory Coast actually are the class of African Cup of Nations 2012 or whether it's influenced by the relative strength of that group. Ghana and Sudan both go through. Ghana, another team, not quite 100% record, but went through with 5 wins and 1 draw.
Sudan is one of the best.
The 1 draw was in the last game against Sudan.
Mm.
So I think that was very much classified as a game that meant very little.
Mm-hmm. Sudan and Libya, the two sides who finished as best runners-up.
Best runners-up. And then Group G, Angola, World Cup team from 2006, I believe it was. And they got through, they bounced back, beating out Uganda, and they go through Kenya.
And that was last day stuff. Angola finishing
top.
Uganda still in the mix going into that last day.
And Uganda dropped a home. There was a home draw at Kenya. Nothing in the last game. While Angola had to go on the road to another Guinea. How many Guineas have they got?
Guinea-Bissau, isn't it?
Yes, Guinea-Bissau, yeah. Where's that? It's in Africa.
Africa, is it?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
I guess.
Anyway,
it's one of those African teams.
Yeah, Angola 1-2-0. Go through, and then we're the big Group K. And I think there was, because this was a group of five, two teams went through from here automatically. Botswana going through. Botswana, country we haven't heard very much of in terms of whether African Cup of Nations or World Cup qualifying. They go through with only 1 loss. And Tunisia bouncing back, and they go through. And as you pointed out, one of the few teams to with any sort of pedigree. But Togo, they've kind of hit. You've got to feel somewhat sympathy for Togo with it. Situation they went through the last African Cup of Nations, they finished second bottom with only 6 points from 8 games.
Just thinking as well, that's as much as you alluded to The bigger teams, well, some of the bigger teams, more better-known teams, not qualifying. You still have Ghana and Ivory Coast qualifying for next January, which would mean that for Premier League teams...
There are some of them.
You know, a number of players that will have to head off.
If Michael Essien was back.
Exactly. You know, you'll have...
Kalou.
Torres, you'd have Drogba. And there's obviously, with other teams taking part, there's a guaranteed another couple of Premier League
ripple,
players.
Ripple effect. I guess it's probably France more than any other country pays attention to the African Cup of Nations in terms of clubs losing players. Sure. Which takes us to our final part, MLS. Only two games on the weekend.
Yes.
San Jose and New England Revolution. 2-1 San Jose. Both teams already out of contention for MLS playoffs, so we're going to skip over that one. But a game both of us watched, Philadelphia. Going to Seattle, winning 2-0. Now, I think on Friday's Fox Soccer Report, I picked Seattle to win this one. And I think we both picked Seattle to win it when we did our predictions last week. But predictions haven't been very good up to now.
And also, I wasn't aware of the rules. I thought, predictions, we just meant... Oh, sorry.
Shots in the dark?
Yeah, Can we get an independent sort of inquiry into this? Because
now we were talking on the way out, and to do the podcast, I was listening to Freakonomics podcast.
Shameless plug there.
Shameless plug. It's very good. It's not about soccer. It's about freaks.
We don't feature in.
No, but it was the piece was on predictions, and so
plenty of freaks there.
I'll post a link to it sometime this week on Soccer Report Extra SoccerReportExtra.com. And the interesting part was that they had people look at some expert predictions, particularly around NFL. And really, experts don't really know very much when it comes to predictions. And actually, experts, in general, don't know very much about predictions either. But we're driven to make them.
Well, see, here's an interesting take on that.
I could have predicted you would have said that,
Being around... analysts and former players and stuff like that through what I do for a living. There's a lot of this that goes on. So X being a former player. How do you think this game is going to fare? Off the top of my head, I think Arsenal are going to win. All right. Okay. And they'll just go with their gut feeling. There's no breakdown of form, what they're like on their travels, you know, how many players they have injured. Because the ex-player is an ex-player, his opinion or her opinion carries great weight. But it's not. It's just normally quite ill-informed.
The Freakonomics, and I might be off on my numbers a little bit here, but I think the number they come up with, even the best, are only about 10% better than random.
Yeah.
I remember reading something a while back that if you're predicting results week in, week out in something like the Barclays Premier League, if you can hit 45%, you're doing amazingly well.
Really?
You are way up there. You should consider yourself absolutely excellent at predictions, because 45% is a tough mark to break, apparently.
So what I deduce from that statement is, for someone who's potentially leading fantasy football, that would point to that person being incredibly well informed.
Fantasy football is something different.
Oh, whoa! What?
This is prediction of results. Fantasy football is round about is players' performance.
Yeah, but
different things.
But I'm predicting the players' performance though with my team selection. No,
but it's a different skill set.
Different skill set, but the same.
So, do you think we should put up predictions every week on SoccerReportExtra.com?
Well, if our MLS predictions are anything to go by, certainly not.
Certainly not. Anyway, back to Philadelphia, Seattle. Yes, great performance from Philadelphia.
We agree on a lot of things. Quite bizarrely, some things we don't, like Arsenal. but we were in the car on our way to the pub. I just did a little gesticulation with a steering wheel
which is strange because you were not driving.
I wasn't. we were talking about the Philadelphia's second goal.
Yes.
Which we both kind of finished each other's sentence. We said it was very un-MLS like.
It was a tremendous counter-attacking goal. If you didn't get a chance to see it, you should catch it in the Fox Soccer Report on Monday. But the fact that this podcast goes out Tuesday, that's a totally irrelevant piece of information. But I'm sure you'll be able to track it down on MLS.com. But it starts off with a Seattle corner being cleared to Alonso. Adu puts a little bit of pressure on him. Looks like he's caught in two minds between playing out to Freiburg and just knocking it back into the penalty area. Finishes up making a hash of it. And from that point, pick it up.
Yeah.
Philadelphia just counterattack.
Yeah, ball is spread to Sebastian Nathu, who's kind of in that left-hand side position.
He's a kind of leggy runner, isn't he?
Yeah. And there's nothing on because he's got no support. So he's got to kind of be patient, hold it up.
Throwing players towards him.
A couple of Seattle players are trying to chase back. And Seattle get about four people or four players getting back into relatively okay positions. But Brian Carroll is making this run.
Just the natural finisher that he is.
Yeah, trying to get up, trying to make that run. And Latu just does brilliantly, really intelligent, holds it up, and then plays a really nice pass as well.
Wait. On that surface, not easy, because that Seattle surface tends to be a bit quick and certainly slick at times as well.
Carroll just takes one touch and then just knocks it back across Casey Keller to the bottom corner. And by not on MLS, what we mean is normally you don't see that patience.
Too many opportunities for it to go wrong.
Yeah, you don't see the weighted pass, and chances are you're not going to see the same sort of finish either. So Philly, as we kind of alluded to with our praise from this game, looked like a team really in good form at the moment.
Very mature. Danny Califf and Valdez at the centre defence were very good. The young goalkeeper, Zach McMath, we're both talking about him on the way as well.
Yeah.
He looks like the real thing.
Who was almost beaten by Brad Evans.
Yeah, nice chip.
A beautiful little chip. Yeah, just comes down off the underside of the bar. But Philly, now top of the East.
Yeah.
And
still got to go to New York last game of the season, I think.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
A local derby.
Yeah, and it could be. Now, I don't think it's going to be a case of Philadelphia having to survive that, perhaps, to make the playoffs. Mm. But it could be a situation where they need to get the result to win the conference.
Yes.
Because that was a big 3 points.
Oh, massive. Well, we both had predicted them not to get anything.
Yeah, Seattle going after Los Angeles Galaxy. That now sewed up the supporter shield for LA Galaxy without actually playing.
Also, on Philly Union, I mean, we talked about this time 12 months ago.
Yeah.
They've gone from zero to hero.
Yeah, they were on the edge. They were kind of... they're probably, I'm not sure, with two games to go. I think they're probably out of it by that time. But they've kind of held on for a while. And they're kind of in that Portland situation. That Portland, they're grabbing on, holding on by the fingernails. But you begin to see it slipping away from them a little bit. But their next game, they've got to go play Toronto next. They finish off with Toronto and they finish off with the New York Red Bulls. Seattle looked a little bit heavy-legged, I thought. Philadelphia packing the midfield. Playing five in there. Freddie Adu kind of drifted in and out, really scored the goal, but didn't do very much. Justin Mapp, I always like Justin Mapp. I know he's not a lot of fans' favourite player, but I think Justin Mapp gives a team that little bit of composure on the ball. And I think it's his willingness to hold the ball and sometimes looking a little bit ponderous on it can make him a target for the fans. But I admire his courage for holding on the ball and not giving it away easily. Mm-hmm. And I think he's also got the ability to pick passes out that few players do in that league as well.
Also, just before we go, Sebastian Nathu.
Yes.
9 goals in his last 10 games.
Yeah.
And when you're just coming into postseason, you see the importance of momentum for certain teams and certainly for certain players. Momentum in MLS... Latu has gone from having 1 goal all season.
Yeah.
Did he just get on this run?
Was it only 3 going into the month of September, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it's just 2 goals here. He won't score in the following game, but he'll get another 2 in the game afterwards. And yeah, just... and he was also on MLS Pulse on the Fox Soccer Report last Thursday. Came across as a really decent guy.
I know talking to people in Seattle, they really regretted leaving, the fact that they felt they had to leave him available in the expansion draft. But also, I think you've got to say as well, it's one of these situations, there was never any real indication that he was going to be a starter, particularly in the kind of positions that Peter Novak has played him in, which is either up front or a support player to that striker as well. But the Carlos Ruiz experiment never really worked in Philly. He was brought in to get some goals, and he did get some goals, but he negated, well, you're really any further forward. You're getting goals from Reese, but you're not getting them from Latu anymore. So that experiment kind of backfired, but it's looking good for Philly in their second year to make the playoffs. That brings to an end our podcast. I'm Bobby McMahon. On behalf of Ono Callahan and producer Luke Crawford, thank you for allowing us to be part of your day. Until the next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast. For more great soccer news, highlights, and analysis, watch the Fox Soccer Report every night at 10 p.m. Eastern on Fox Soccer and Fox Sports World Canada. And be sure to check out SoccerReportExtra.com daily for previews, opinions, and reviews. Music for this podcast provided by SoundJay.com.
So what are you doing back?
Well, I sat back and thought about the things we used to do. It really meant a lot to me. You mean a lot to me.
I really mean that much to you?
Girl, you know it's true.